Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So, today for Goals Question Time, I'm re-interviewing and connecting with Rob Van Lane, who is Chief Innovation Officer and member of the Executive Committee at Royal DSM. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good to be speaking to you and that again. As you know, I featured DSM as a case study in a chapter of my book, Open Innovation in Action, back in 2006. And we also did a very good overview interview about DSM and your role as CIO in early 2012. And we don't want to repeat those areas because those are available and that for our listeners. But I think really in this interview, I'd really like to give some backward-looking reflections and consider some strategic innovation and venturing sort of going forward. So can you give us a brief introduction to yourself and your current role then, please, as a member of the Executive Committee at DSM?
Sure. maybe start with my background. I'm a biochemist, PhD in molecular biology, and while I was working, I had an MBA, so I have both a scientific and a business background in terms of education. Started with a biotech company in the Netherlands, had several roles both in R&D as well as in business, and was taken over by DSM 98. And I've ever since been part of the transformation of DSM. My last job before this one, I was running the food specialties business of DSM, and I'm now already for more than 10 years, the Chief Innovation Officer, and indeed the last 2 years also part of the Executive Committee of the company.
Great. So, I've been really pleased and watched the success of DSM as it's moved forward. Could you give us a bit of a reflection, please, on your innovation and venture model, how they've changed then over the last 5 to 10 years because you have your strategic cycles?
Yes. Yeah, it's maybe indeed because I think last time we talked about the fact that DSM has these what we call corporate strategy dialogues that take place every 5 years. And last time we spoke, we were in the middle of one that ended in 2015. And I think everybody expected us to have another next 5 year plan, so to speak, till 2020. Interestingly enough, we broke tradition and we have now a 3-year strategic plan, which ends at the end of 2018. A couple of reasons for that, I think some internal, some external. Of course, as you know, the world has become not always more of nicer. In our case also, we had a couple of hedge funds into the company, putting pressure on everything, trying to split up the company. Fortunately, as a Dutch listed company, we are a bit protected against such attacks. But of course, it also makes you think, why is this happening? Are we doing all the things right? And so on. And it's fair to say that over the last couple of years, we have invested a lot in what you could call purpose. So doing right for the world, it's part of our strategy to make the world a better place, as we say, for people today, but also generations to come. And we're focusing on renewable fuels and looking at climate change in general. We're looking at, of course, feeding the world and treating trouble in nutrition, both in terms of malnutrition and hunger, as well as overnutrition and obese people and so on, so also the nutrition problems of the developed world, to give just a few examples. And that has all stayed, but you could say we had lost in all of that a little bit the view on the financial ratios, and that of course then attracts people that want to break you up and make money on the short term. We've been able to prevent that, that's one thing, and secondly, I think in our current 3-year cycle, we are improving also our ratios again and improving the profitability and still not jeopardizing the future and still continue to invest in innovation and the longer term. And I think that is something that I'm still proud of DSM as a company, that although we may now have a focus for the shorter term on getting the finance right and improving those ratios, we continue to invest also in the future and the longer term. And yeah, that has basically not changed. It maybe has taken has forced us to focus a little bit sharper, but that's maybe also healthy. So in general, I feel very positive about that.
Very good, very good. And the breadth of your responsibilities in looking after the investment, putting the direct investments in funds, your direct investments, and your developing new areas, the eBARs. Could you give us an indication of the size of those different parts of the portfolio you're now responsible for?
Yeah, so I have indirect responsibility for all innovation in the company. I have, by the way, direct responsibility of the quality of the process. So part of our innovation center is aimed at making the whole company better and faster at innovation and educating people and so on. We also have then support for that through an excellence in innovation group. The CTO is with me to make sure that the quality of the R&D is in shape. We have IP and licensing. And of course, venturing, corporate venturing. I'll come back to that in a minute. And that is to more or less make sure that 75% of what we spend as a company on innovation and on R&D is managed well and better every year, hopefully. And we benchmark ourselves with the McKinsey benchmark, and we are the last couple of years consistently in the top quartile in that respect. So that is, I think, going quite well. The other part is that I'm shaping new parts for DSM outside the scope of the current running business groups, which is where we spend about 25% of our money. And that basically runs first to an incubator where we assess ideas, and if they are sufficiently attractive and sizable, we promote things to what we call an EBA, an emerging business area. At the moment, we have three of them, one in biomedical materials and medical devices, one in solar, and one in bio-based products. And, of course, then in the incubator, there are a couple of very interesting topics in line, you could say, in waiting to be promoted. And in the meantime, we are developing them further. So, yeah, I think in the next strategy period, one or two of the current EBAs might go out of the Innovation Center, no longer needing the air cover, so to speak, and that creates then the room for new ones. That's a bit of the plan, how we go forward. So that means that I'm directly responsible for those things that do not generate yet a lot of money in terms of turnover and EBITDA, but of course they hopefully create a lot of value for DSM, being the future earnings for the company. But of course this all takes 10 or 15 years before you have developed something from scratch to something that is really meaningful.
And in terms of ones that you've developed over the last 10 years, which are sort of EBARs have you seen sort of become substantial and become more significant within DSM?
I think I would say that the one that will first go out of the Innovation Center is the biomedical EBA. We had a bit of an issue last year in with the leadership, and we missed one interesting small acquisition that we were looking into. That would have probably brought it to a size that it could easily stand on its own feet. So we hope to do that in this year or the next year. So that's why I'm saying probably in this strategic period we will bring it to the point where it can really fuel also its own innovation. That is the main reason why we have the Innovation Center, that the EBAs can go through this dip that is inevitable in terms of first investing before you can harvest. I think by next year there should be enough earnings for the biomedical group to make its own money and to fund its own future. I think solar will be quickly afterwards. We just acquired a small group in China, still more technology than turnover, but looks very, very promising. And of course that market is growing really, really fast. So yeah. I do expect that solar also in the coming years will be grown up enough and profitable enough to also fund its own future. And that then creates a space for the new EBAs that are coming out of the pipeline of the incubator.
Good. Okay. So, as you touched on there, you're developing these in the incubator. You're developing these EBAs. Many corporates that I work with will go into corporate venturing with the perception that they will invest in minority stakes in these startups, and then they will acquire those businesses on preferential terms. But as you're sort of describing there, you're developing those areas, and then you're going to do acquisition in parallel to these things from the knowledge you've gained. Could you give us a bit more of could you just make me clarify that is the case, and it's not a case of you invest in something then expect that little business itself to be the one that you're acquiring?
Yeah, that could be the case, but it's a very good question. I think over time we have now invested in about 50 startups, and I think they serve different purposes. For one, they help us find our way in new fields where we are not familiar yet, and you could maybe it's not the nicest way to put it, but sometimes see it as cheap R&D, cheap market intelligence, because it sounds like a lot when you invest a few million in it, but if you see what we spend on R&D, which is in DSM somewhere between 450 and 500 million, spending a few million on an investment that gives you quite good insight in a new field, that is certainly worth it. So part of our strategy is those fields where we want to grow fast, like I mentioned, biomedical, but also the modern nutrition. We have spent quite a lot on investments in startups, and that brings us indeed then the market intelligence and the technology intelligence, not always with the purpose of bringing those companies in. We have quite a few examples where we had an agreement with the startup. Could be, for instance, a distribution agreement for compounds that they have developed and where we can use our global distribution network very well. There's a good example of one of the nutrition investments that we have made. And we now market a product called FruitFlow that clearly they could never have done globally, and where we helped the company by doing that. And we will probably never acquire the company, but while we are doing this, of course, the value of the investment goes up, but especially our product portfolio is growing and their expansion is going very well. So that is one example. But in biomedical, it has helped us clearly to identify the spaces where we want to be active and the spaces where we do not want to be active. And to cut a long story short, of the 50 investments we did so far, we have currently 25 around, more or less, in the portfolio as being active. Some no longer strategic, some still very strategic. Over the whole period of 10, 12 years, I think only 3 of them we have actually acquired. Many more we had collaborations, like I just described, licensing agreements, distribution agreements, and so on. So it clearly helps shape what you could say the total value chain, and that comes then from collaborations, comes from licensing in, comes from venturing, and also comes from small acquisitions. But that is not necessarily what we use the corporate venturing tool for. It is possible, but it's clearly not the goal.
Yes. Okay, now excellent description there. I think your point about the it providing market insights and being an alternative to R&D, John Luckner, who heads up General Motors R&D as well with billions of dollars of development and research under his remit, made a very similar point actually as well. So I agree with that point, and that's a very good broader overview. So I'm working with a number of organizations and discuss this within the Global Corporate Venturing Academy, that I believe that corporates now need to consider how they join up different technologies, different startups and partners to form what I term innovative new value chains. So this is where new materials, new Internet of Things, new data, artificial intelligence could be fundamentally changing the health industry, the automotive industry, the utilities of the type sector, and maybe in the areas you're working in, solar and health and sort of stuff like that as well. I think, would you recognize that as a description, that DSM is is seeing that change and is identifying, capturing value along those new knowledge-intense products and services?
Yeah, I fully recognize that. I would say that we have recognized this trend, especially in the EVAs that I described, like biomedical and solar, and we have also built them basically from scratch in the way you describe it, many different elements in it. Of course, more difficult to introduce that in the running business with more traditional thinking. Still, I would say over the last couple of years, we have now seen also in our more traditional businesses that this way of thinking has been adopted, more partnerships, more joint ventures, more internal ventures based on new models. And I think it all has to do with the realization that the innovation speed is going up all the time, not only in the ESM, but externally also. I mean, there have never been more scientists in the world as today. It is obvious that most of the innovation and inventions happen outside your company. And that means that you need a clear, open mind and an assessment of what's going on in the world permanently. And therefore, these tools are extremely, extremely good to use to build the whole business and indeed the value chain. I would say where we can still do better, and I find that difficult, so if you have an answer, it would be great, is how to introduce also this whole new big data, almost avalanche that is now taking place, and how to make sense of it and how to use it and how to reshape a more traditional business, even if we do already many things very, very different than in the past, to connect everything, indeed connect data, Internet of Things, all of that into shaping new businesses for a company like DSM.
It is a challenge for certainly a number of corporates that I'm working with at the moment, understanding where new materials, new devices, artificial intelligence, big data is coming together. And one example with the consumer business at the moment I'm working with, when we sat down with the strategy director and showed her these sort of six elements that I felt was going to be affecting their consumer business, she felt that, or she certainly didn't understand what four of them are going to be impacting their business and the data sort of aspect. Although I'd even challenge whether the two that she thought she knew in terms of how the relationship with customers is going to work, whether they actually knew that as well from a consumer business point of view, because now, as you're saying, this big data, the insights, the social media that's now going to be running through that industry is going to be different than that as well. But I don't see this as the point you're making, is that it's not a lack of science or technology. It's more just how does the organization think about how these things are going to join together, because we're certainly seeing new models coming through. But I would also believe that I sort of say that Silicon Valley have done the easy things with devices and solving health issues, solving energy issues, solving some bigger society issues in the sustainability area that you look at requires sort of grown-up corporates and these technologies to work together. Because you need assets and you need longer science development and sort of stuff like that. But I really believe now that we're at that point where we can join these things together. And it requires that open-mindedness and journey, really. So in terms of measuring, you touched on it earlier, in terms of measuring your sort of your sharper focus on your financial and strategic performance, that balance has now shifted, or you've got your metrics now in this current plan for DSM?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure what we shared last time, but we always had a focus on achieving a certain amount of innovation sales in a strategic period. But we have changed it at a certain point in time to a percentage, because, of course, the company can vary in terms of size when you do more portfolio shifts, although we haven't done a lot recently, but we are now striving for 20% at least of innovation sales, meaning that stuff introduced in the last 5 years. So every year a year falls off and a new year is added. So that keeps the portfolio fresh and you update it. Secondly, in the past we didn't have margin requirements, but basically we say the margin should at least be 5 to 10% better than the running business. Now, that is actually consistently going on at the moment, so we're close to the 10%. What is, of course, important for us, since we really have the objective to make the world a better place, so to speak, that we have what we call brighter living solutions. And in the past, we may have discussed things like Eco Plus and People Plus concepts, basically meaning that we want to have stuff in the pipeline that is either good for the planet or good for people. And we have specific ways of measuring that. In the Eco Plus part, is basically it means that the footprint of the products that we sell should be better than the next available alternative from a competitor. And in People Plus, we have worked together with other companies to define what that means. And that can be a broad array of things, and you can read a lot about it on our website. Also there, I think we have found a way to measure it. And all in all, we say we should have a pipeline in innovation that has between 85 and 90% of projects that are either Eco Plus or People Plus, or both. And of course, since we introduced this into the company, that will help rejuvenate the portfolio. And we have brought now our portfolio from 38% a couple of years ago to now close to 60, and that's, of course, will go on. So in the coming years, we will try to make our whole portfolio basically Eco Plus or People Plus. And that is an important driver for the whole innovation group in DSM.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Rob. You've given us some great insights there on the broad overview of DSM, some particular examples within your e-bars and areas where you're investing and partnering. So when you're not venturing, what are you doing to relax? Sports was a key aspect when we last spoke, and of course the Olympics was around that time. What are you doing to relax now?
Well, that sports is still an important part. Traveling is still an important part. So that is what I spend most of my free time. In the meantime, we have a house in the south of France where I like to play golf with my wife when we go there. So, I'm still doing more or less the same in that respect, trying to stay fit and get a clear mind when I'm off.
Excellent, Rob. Really appreciate your time again in giving us this update. Thank you.
You're welcome.